Welcome to Teachings in the Air. Welcome to Teachings in the Air podcast with Jerry Oldman. Coming to you from Hunkaminam territory with a podcast series about Indigenous men's health and wellness. We aim to inspire, motivate, and empower Indigenous men to be sound in mind, body, and spirit, because that's what health means. This is Teachings in the Air with Jerry Oldman. Today I come here to talk to you about activism. I'm thinking of calling this podcast From a Worrier to a Warrior, or part two of Look Before You Jump, because of what's happening right now. You know, the pandemic and the Black Lives Matter movement, everything is going on right now. It's brought me down memory lane, you know, and about answering the call to fight for justice, to stop the pain and suffering, to make noise, to make myself present, to create change. And that's what I'm doing through the podcast. The goal, of course, is social change. To change society, to stop the racist policies and laws, to stop harm from happening to my people. You know, all of the events that continuously unfold seems to me, when I hear of a death at the hands of a police officer, the feeling I get is that no one seems to care. And it saddens me. It saddens me to think of the families, the mothers and fathers of that person, the children, if they have children, the siblings, the cousins or relatives and their friends. What they must go through. You know, when I was in high school, one of the courses I took interest in was history, world history. There I started to hear about Alexander the Great, Julius Caesar, Genghis Khan, you know, these ones that would unite people and do empire building. It seemed glamorous to me. You know, and I didn't think of people being oppressed and their land being stolen. I just seen these ones in history that history is told. It literally is his story, men telling stories. You know, when I was in high school and I started to read, as I became interested in history, there were two books that I read in high school that influenced me to become an activist. The first one was The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. I don't know what got me to read that book. It's a thick book with tiny print, but I read it. And I'm a visual learner, a visual person, so I could see in my mind what Hitler and his cohort were doing to gain power with the brown shirts, you know, and the messages that they were giving out. It was so shocking to see what they were doing. You know, the whole idea of the master race and ethnic cleansing, I could see it, I could feel it. And I, you know, I'd see that they were killing. They wanted to wipe out all the Jews, the gypsies, the handicapped, the gays, and the ones that spoke against them, their own people. They would kill them too. Ah, that was such a frightening book. But I could see how, I started to understand how people would take control, would take over. The other book that I read was, I don't know how I even got a hold of it or how it ended up in my hands, but it was a handbook by Che Guevara on guerrilla warfare. And I read that book. So seeds were being planted on me to be a revolutionary or to be an activist. There are statements that I heard at this time that were motivating me, that were motivational to me. First one that I heard was about racism and what people were saying, that white is right, black step back, brown step down. You know, that triggered me to want to fight, want to do something. And the other statement that would just get me shook up and angry and emotional was that we were called the vanishing race. And I could see that. Our language was disappearing, our music, our ceremonies and rituals. I guess I got so upset because there was some truth to it that I felt at that time. So those were two books that planted the seed in me that I wanted to be part of a movement. But when I left residential school in 1968, there was not a platform for me to join. And at that time, I had no skills or anything in starting a movement. I'm just so impressed with people that do. There's youngsters that do that. It wasn't me. I was damaged goods walking out of that school. So I, you know, I left there. And started to be a laborer and an addict and an alcoholic. So at this time too, there was a civil rights movement in the United States with Martin Luther King Jr., with Malcolm X. And I started to, would every now and again get inspired You know, and there was Mahatma Gandhi in India. So I had this, like, this visuals of these people that were doing something. Oh, and I'd see the pictures of what is going on in the United States of America with Black Lives. And, you know, it was on TV, so it was pretty blatant. The beatings, the dogs. Seemed like nobody cared for them either. Growing up, I had that feeling that nobody cared about us as Indigenous people in Canada. Like when I was still in high school, you know, as a member, one of the Indigenous men got killed by an RCMP officer in a jail cell in Williams Lake. I remember when we'd gather as teenagers and one of my friends said, "Hey, you want to kill an Indian?" And I'd look at him and he says, "Join RCMP," and he'd laugh. So we knew how serious this was at that age. People wonder why we resist arrest or run away when the RCMP come. Because we're afraid for our lives. So that was what is unfolding around me in my life. That there were people, individuals, that became the voice of change. And I also, because I was and still am an avid reader, I'd also read about Pontiac, Chief Pontiac, Chief Sitting Bull, Poundmaker, Chief Seattle, these different Geronimo, Crazy Horse, these ones that would, I'd consider fighting to save a way of life, which is our way. So those were all in the mix of Jerry. I guess you could say percolating inside of Jerry. In my community, there was an elder named Tom Bull. And he'd tell me one day, the sleeping giant's going to wake up. And we're working with our people. You know, we'd see the impacts of colonization being lived out in front of our eyes, and we were trying to put it together, seeing what we could do to help the people. There'd be suicide, violence, addictions, broken families. And one day he said to me, "One day, Jerry, the sleeping giant will wake up." I realized later that he was talking about all of the Indigenous people, that we'd wake up and become one mind, one heart, one spirit, to fix ourselves, to fix our lives. So after I left the addictions life, I could see more clearly. I was more alert. And the first call to help. And, nobody really called us, but we heard what was going on with one of our communities. All of a sudden, one of our communities blockaded a highway going through their community. of course, we'd ask why, and we were told that there were grandmothers that were fishing and drying and smoking salmon. And the fish and game officers came in and cut their nets and confiscated their nets. Already at that time, you know, many of us were being trouble with fish and game because they were putting in laws and restricting our food fishery. It was a plan all along that they're going to do this when they put us in a reserve. So anyway, the people rose up in that community. You don't mess with elders. You know, when you do that, something's going to happen. So we, as a community, decided to send support. And I brought people. And I got introduced to a spiritually governed resistance. How it happened, I don't know. It's all I know is it happened. When we pulled up to the road blockade to enter the community, they had security, indigenous security, manning the blockade. And they came up to the vehicle I was driving and said, there are no alcohol, drugs, or weapons allowed. We need to check your vehicle. So they did. We didn't have any, of course, so they let us in and we set up camp. It was there I started to wake up and accept being indigenous. It was there I felt it rushing through my body. Every cell in my body was waking up to be indigenous. Because, you know, there were times when I was growing up, I hated to be indigenous. Because of the awful ways, words of stupid Indian, crazy Indians, drunken Indians, what I was hearing in the world. I was ashamed, I was angry, I was depressed. I was afraid. So, one of the first things I heard when we were there, there were these people around a fire with hand drums. The men had long hair and they were hand drumming and they were doing chanting and traditional music. As soon as I heard them, I went over and I was watching and listening with this hunger to do that too. And I was standing there watching, and one of the men seen me and done that head gesture of, hey, come here. So I went over and he says, join us. I said, I don't know how. He says, you'll learn. So I stood with them, and it was so empowering for me to be there. And it just got better. A day or so later, they announced that there's going to be a sweat lodge, that anyone's welcome. So I made sure I went. Because I'd heard about sweat lodges. Hadn't been to one. And here I am. You know, 26 years old. 27, actually, never been to a ceremony. There it was. They had this Cree elder. He came and built the lodge and was going to do the ceremony. I remember I went and I was afraid to make a mistake, to make a fool of myself. And this man was so gentle. So aware. And he thanked us for being there and told us not to worry. We're in a good place. And he said that his ceremony was going to be in Cree, in his language, and for us not to worry because he had his helper to translate so we'd understand as the ceremony was going on. I remember when I seen this man praying with his pipe. At one point in the ceremony, he was weeping. And his helper said that he was praying for his grandchildren, that they'd be all right when he leaves, that someone would teach them and carry on. When I seen that, I started to think, I want what this man has. He's authentic, he's real, he's filled with passion and emotion. It was, that whole event was life-changing for Jerry. I start to grow my hair, I start to be interested in ceremony, I started to ask questions with my own elders, with my own family. So that was my first activist experience, standing with people that accepted their identity. No problem, they're proud of it. Oh boy, that was a life-saving moment for me. After that, my activism was being an addictions counselor. We were promoting, we're saying culture is healing at that time. So I was working one-on-one and with families about defeating alcoholism and addictions. Then the second activism I got involved in was what they called Save the Stein. It's a watershed that we share with the Chapmuk people, the people from Lytton area. So we'd have concerts and send out information, do petitions, where there's all kinds of things happening to save the Stein. Eventually we saved it because of people working together. There's a movement. And again, I remember I went to one of the events and I helped build a sweat lodge up in the Alpine. Largest lodge I ever helped build. And we used it every day while we were there. So again, it was spiritually guided. And then my third activist story, I guess you could say, or history was, I became a chief of my community. I didn't really want to be that. You know, it was an Indian Act system, but people persuaded me to, so I went in. And one of our members' daughter had cancer. And I'd support the family, and I could see the pain and suffering because of this cancer. My grandauntie had passed from cancer, too. So I'd hear about carcinogens in our tribal council. Sent me a message saying that BC Rail was going to be spraying herbicides along the Anderson Lake and Seton Lake. And what they were spraying had carcinogens. So I said, I'll go stop them. There's an emergency. So there was one other man that came with me. I jumped in my vehicle and drove to the end of the lake and stood on the track. And the train pulled up to me, the work train, had these flat cars with spraying machines, nozzles that would stick out the side, and they're going to spray along the lake, all along the railroad. And this man come up to me and he says, what are you doing? I said, oh, I'm here to stop you any way I can. My people eat fish out of that lake. We pick berries from beside the lake. And my people are getting cancer. And I'm told that that substance you're using has carcinogens in it, so I'm here to stop you. He left, and people were telling me later they could hear on radios that they're calling RCMP, railroad security, and you know, there's a lot of noise. So I stood there with my one supporter, thinking I'd go to jail and I'd be all right. But they came and they said, we won't spray by the lakes. I said, oh, well, you want the train to go through, and it has to go through because there's other trains coming. And I said, but one of my members is going to ride with you, and you're going to give them the nozzles so they won't spray. To my surprise, they accepted. They took all the nozzles off the spraying machines and put it in a bag and gave it to the one of our members who's going to ride the train. So that was number two. This is driven by the visual of people with cancer. And that we didn't have this before, and is coming from the carcinogens. Not only from the herbicides, but the PCBs that is created from the hydroelectric plant right smack dab in the middle of our reservation. So I was aware of that. Then after that, we got involved in fishing rights. You know, members were going to jail for fishing. The Fish and Game had put in restrictions on us food fishing, where at one time we go when the salmon are there. We'd get enough salmon for all winter. We'd dry it, we'd can it, and we'd freeze it. And they started to confiscate nets, vehicles, give people fines, charge them in court. And I remember we had a demonstration down by the Fraser River, and it was planned, and we just have one fisherman out on the fishing station with a dip net, a traditional dip net, fishing for salmon. And we'd switch. And Fish and Game flew into the area with their helicopter because there was no roads there. And we're all standing there. These officers marched down. There's one of our chiefs that had his turn on the net. I remember they handcuffed him behind his back. We're walking him off the fishing rocks. But they didn't have the legs or the balance to walk because it's very rocky and uneven. And we could see the chief is actually holding them up as they're